You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves, coming at you live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Happy Friday morning to you, John Reed, Bob Baskerville, Sam Beard. Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is Friday. It is the morning show. Bob, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. It's Friday. A little sleepy. Stayed up late last night trying to watch basketball. Watched the first round of the draft till the bitter end. But I'm that's okay. That's the stuff we like to watch. I'm doing good. How about you?
I don't know if that's the stuff we like to watch or not. There was a point at me at 11:30. I was like, why is this still going on?
My roommate came home last night from a little birthday party he was at, and I was still watching the draft at, like, pick 31, and he was like, you know, there's NBA basketball on right now, dude. I was like, yeah, my bad. I'm kind of a sicko like that. I'm just watching the draft.
Yeah, and the NBA basketball, it was just one of those, like, where you're like, oh, man, this Nuggets team is special. This Lakers team is sad. I was like, yep, back to the draft. I'm good. I don't need to see. Don't need to see this. I know what's happening here. Draft went on too long. 7:30. Make the change, Roger. Move it up 30 minutes. Come on.
Just don't let them have 10 minutes to pick.
Right. No, you got to let them have 10 minutes to pick.
No, you've had 4 months to pick.
Well, things change. It's a fluid board.
Not really. First overall?
If you were the Jets or if you were the whoever was picking number 9 and you see the Falcons go with Michael Penix, you're like, hold on a second. Wait, we got to take a second here. We got to readjust. We got to fill some trade offers.
I'm saying like the top 3 picks only get like 2 minutes to pick.
Hey, can we talk about that for a second? Because, again, I guess maybe it's dealer's choice. I have heard, and I don't know which one to take anymore. Is it Penix or is it Penix? Because last night everybody was calling him Penix. Yesterday we were on the call with Jordan Dejani. Uh-huh. You've been calling him Penix. Jordan called him Penix. Guess it's just whatever you want it to be.
Michael Penix. I don't care. I'm going Penix.
All right, that'll be the morning show pronunciation. We got to keep it consistent.
If it comes out, it gets on record where he's like, hey, guys, it's pronounced this way, which maybe he has. Maybe he has. I just like the big Penix energy. Mm-hmm. That's what Desmond called him. That's what I'm going to call him.
God, that was a cringy moment. Desmond doing that on game day. Do you remember that?
No, oh, yeah. Don't. Oh, you don't?
That's what John's talking about. But
yeah. You know, he had a whole thing where he tried to sing a little song. Big Penix energy. Big Penix energy. And I was like, oh, okay. All right.
I was trying to figure out, I'm assuming it was on YouTube. I could never find McAfee and Belichick.
Yeah, it was on YouTube.
That's what I figured.
I watched it for a little bit.
How was it?
It was pretty good. I liked Bill a lot.
You watched it over the fan run war room?
I had both on at times.
You monster.
I honestly had it on for the Titans pick, and then we had the whole thing went down, and I was like, yeah. I got kind of mad. Had to blow off some steam for a couple picks. Then I came back down to earth.
I had to blow some steam off, too. I was mad. I was sitting in there, and it just never brought me in. I felt like I wasted my whole night. It just didn't share the ball. It was like, hey, everyone's going to get a chance to come in here and do draft coverage. And just never got to do any draft coverage myself. I was ready. But it's fine. No big deal. Those guys were warriors. I can't complain. Marcus held it down. Tucker held it down for the entire first round, I believe. I left it like pick 24 or so. I assume they kept going. It's a long night. Good job by those guys. Marcus brought some food. Bear brought some food.
Yeah, it was fun. Those guys did do a good job to the extent that we were sitting in the lobby or the green room, whatever you want to call it. We were all kind of like, man, they need to have a little fun. It was a little too analytical, a little too serious. But, I mean, they had prepared.
They had it when I was in here just for a little bit. I could see, like, Tucker had everybody's breakdown and, like, every team, the needs, the projected picks, some stats about them. They had a paragraph on every team. No, they They prepped their asses off. I thought it was just going to be like a hangout, ha, 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 this guy sucks. But no, it was good. They had some sound in there for every prospect after a pick. You got like a 50-second rundown of it. I'll say, like, you know, they dropped the ball on a couple things. Like, I came in here 10 minutes in, and they didn't have the podcast running.
It'd be important.
Yeah, and I had to, like, start the podcast for them. They forgot to do that. Like, it was like 8:18. It was 8:20. Like, a pick had already been made, basically, by the time they actually got on. I was like, how's it 8:30 and they haven't gotten on yet? Like, what the hell's going on here? And, you know, my boy Dawson, producer of Overtime, I mean, he was out there straight grubbing instead of getting the show on and ready. Like,
I didn't know. I'd never met Dawson before. So I came in and I was like, I didn't know. I was thinking like, okay, maybe, you know, I don't know Ryan's family that well, the owner, you know, I thought maybe it was his son or I had no idea. I was like, man, that dude's getting after it.
Straight grubbing.
And then I heard you say to him, hey, man, hey, Dawson, I think they need you in there.
I told him twice. He's like, yeah. And he just kept grubbing. And then I was like, well, you better go. And I don't know him either. Last night was the first time I met him, and I don't know if he took it personally when I told him to make sure he washes his grubby little hands. Because that's what I told him, which grubby little hands is a phrase I use a lot. But I don't know how he took it because he's in there grubbing, straight grubbing. And I'm like, you don't want to go in there with all that grease. And
yeah.
I was like, make sure you wash your grubby little hands and don't get our equipment all greasy is what I told him. And I don't know how he took that.
I'm with you, Sam. For reference, it was like big saucy wings,
big saucy pizza. Wings, and big greasy pizza. Yeah, it's just.
At least you didn't call him his grubby paws. I think that would have been worse.
Yeah, you get your grubby paws. All yeah.
It would have been better if you like followed him. Then like, where are you going? You gonna go grab some paper towels? Go.
Meanwhile, Houston's running around like, "Hey, Dawson." He's like, "Yeah, yeah." Houston's getting frustrated. Yeah, Houston got frustrated a couple times last night. That was the highlight of my night. Is I thought we were going to have a come to Jesus meeting with Houston and G.I. Jake shows Brett. Brett had Houston rolled up by the fifth time. About an hour and a half, 2 hours into the draft, Brett spoiled the pick for us for the fifth time. Oh. After we had asked him. We had asked him three other times, like, hey, stop. And he kept finding a way to do it. And finally, Houston says, what the bleep is wrong with you? And, like, didn't I say it in a joking way? And then there was just an awkward silence. I was like, oh, God.
That is number one rule of a draft party, though. Yeah. Like, you can't be the guy leaking picks.
Well, we did so good until, like, pick seven.
So that's when it gets important.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, like, the first, like, I think I even complimented. I think I jinxed. I was like, hey, great job, everybody, not jinxing the picks. Revealing the picks. I'm pretty shocked that they haven't been spoiled. And then, like, all of a sudden, they start coming out, and Brett's like, oh, my God, the Falcons did what?
Yeah.
They took a quarterback, and everyone's like, oh, Brett. And then, like, they're sitting there, and then Jack was like, Jack showed up, which made my night. I love Jack. He showed up. Sam didn't, but Jack did. And he's sitting there, and then he spoiled it because Brett, I guess, had leaked, or he had seen, like, it wasn't J.J. McCarthy, because when they said quarterback, it was like, oh, J.J. McCarthy. He's like, who? Yeah. And then like, right before it's picked, and then, yeah, Penix, like, oh, well, I kind of already knew. Damn it.
J.J. McCarthy's fire, man. he's shooting that one out. yeah, and I saw Brett make an eye contact with you on the Brock Bowers pick.
Yeah.
So I knew before it even got announced. I was like, God, come on. Brett, yeah. Stop, man. Just stop.
He did the whole thing because somebody was like, it might have been Bob, said, they got to go defense here. And Brett's like, yeah, definitely. They're going defense here.
Talk about the Raiders.
And I'd already seen it. That was like one of the few times I was on Twitter. So like, I just looked at Brett like, you're not fooling me, buddy. Your little game here where you're
they're definitely going defense.
No, they went offense.
It sounded like it was a good time, but I think I'm glad I didn't show up. That's my number one pet peeve of a draft party is having a pick spoiled. I would have walked out after three picks got spoiled.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it was bad. Like, it management got onto him, didn't faze him. I got onto him, didn't faze him. And Houston lit him up, and then they tagged in. Then he came in here. So I don't know if he was spoiling the broadcast or what. But he left the green room, and then pretty much it was just me, Ryan, and Houston. At a certain point, we just watched. And
so was it Marcus? It was like Marcus Tucker and Will in here.
Yeah, and Dawson. Then, William left. I don't know. I think Dawson left too, or no? I think Dawson stayed. Dawson ran the whole board. I'm pretty sure.
Then Brett joined.
Then Brett joined and took over Patterson's spot. Yeah,
but
I mean, 3 minutes when the Titans came on. I just got forced by Wilma. They made me feel awkward. Like, I was trying to bust in. They're like, we're on the air. And I'm kind of like, well, it's okay, guys. And I'm standing there, and then they're just making me stand there and linger. So then I'm feeling like a jerk that I'm crashing their party. But I was like, I want to talk about the Titans for a second. Mm-hmm. And then finally I got on, and it was just – tried to loosen them up. I tried to grab hands, hold hands for a prayer circle. And
Marcus broke the prayer circle.
They broke the prayer circle. Well, it sucks because we're all holding hands. It's like, we got to take a break right quick. So they went to commercial, and he's like, well, do we keep holding hands? I'm like, well, you know, maybe. And then we broke it.
After the Colts pick, I came in. We were just trying to do things to maybe loosen them up a little. And I came in, and I was like, you know, I go, man, that Colts pick sucked like that. And William's sitting right there, and William gives me a fist bump and goes, just went right into analysis. He goes, man, I think it's a good pick. Latu is, you know, and I was like, oh, come on, man, I'm trying.
Well, actually, the guy that medically had to retire from football 2 years ago was actually a really great pick.
Yeah. Yes. It was interesting watching Marcus and hearing Marcus. He kind of took the A chair. He was there. And then I was curious how it was going to go once Brett came in, because then they go, you know, is it going to revert back to the bickering and all that stuff? And there was a little bit of it when I was listening to it, but it wasn't too bad.
All I could think of was that was Marcus and Tucker's audition. I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
I think that's what happened. We put two hungry for power people that have been kept in seat 3 and 4, and we gave them seats 1 and 2 in prime time, and they're like, hey, let's nail this, and then we're going to get our 12-3 show. That's – Colin Cowherd will go away after they see our draft preparation. I think that's what happened. We gave two guys a chance to shine, and we thought it was a pickup game, but it's like the undrafted rookie that's trying to, like, break into the league. And he's like, no, I'm D-ing Devin Booker up. I'm double teaming. I'm playing really hard defense here. No easy buckets. I'm fouling because, hey, in case somebody's watching, I want them to know that I mean business when I'm on the basketball court. And I think that's what we did. We let the 3 and 4. Tucker wants to spread his wings. He got to spread his wings. Marcus wants to spread his wings and get away from Jake. And he got his chance, and he was like, boom, here we go. And I think that's what happened.
Sam, it's probably just as well you didn't come, because you're so chill. You wouldn't have gotten the ball at all if you were in here. Yeah. You would have been
asking for the ball.
You would have been just sitting here.
If I couldn't get the ball, you're not getting the ball.
Yeah, yeah. That's very,
that's kind
true.
Of the way I felt. Like, very I was somewhat pulling rank, but then, like, they just made me stand there, and I was like, this is awkward, but I can't leave. I was like, I can't leave before I get on the microphone. I was like, because if the video's watching, it's going to be so embarrassing of just me busting in, lingering, not getting to talk.
You had to stay on your ground.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. A little bit. But it was an L for me.
There was a vibe. I mean, when I came in and I did that whole, you know, trying to break the ice, and I was like, all right, guys, big fan, and they were like, yeah, thanks. Kind of a wave off, like, yeah, get out.
They didn't like it. Yeah. They didn't like it. They made you feel awkward if you came in here, yeah. Which, again, that wasn't the vibe I thought we were going for, but those kids worked their asses off, and they did a good job with it. And
sure did.
And I'm proud of them. I'm a little offended, again, that I didn't get to have the ball any. But I'm proud of them. They worked hard, and, you know, I got a text said that they sound like Mel Kiper. So, there you go.
Fan Run War Room.
Yeah, the Fan Run War Room was giving you the Mel Kiper breakdowns.
They wanted Mel Brooks. They got Mel Kiper. That's what the listeners were thinking. But they did some prep for sure.
Good job by them. And also, like, you know, got new subscribers for the YouTube channel. Got some kinks worked out on our end for how we're going to do this, you know, in the new studio and doing the streaming and doing the firing up and doing this extra stuff. So, like, it was a successful night. Sam, you said you were mad about the Titans pick?
Initially, I was. And then, you know,
oh, wow.
I slept on it a little bit.
Oh, wow.
Saw some things on Twitter, and I'm starting to come around.
All right, we'll talk about that after the break. Stick with us. It's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio. All right, NFL draft round one in the books after about 4 hours. 4 hours in the books. All 32 picks were made. No surprises at the top. The first four picks, I thought, were no-brainers. You kind of wondered what the Chargers were going to do. They went with the best offensive lineman available, or at least the guy that everyone has been calling the best offensive lineman available for a long time. You thought maybe they would give in for a wide receiver, and then you see the quote afterwards from Jim Harbaugh where people are going to talk about us not having any weapons, but we view offensive linemen as weapons. And I'm like, yep, Jim Harbaugh's back, baby. Yeah. Now they got two of the best left tackles in the league.
He pulled his classic line to Ald on the phone, too. He was like, who's got it better than us?
Oh, is he bringing that now to the Chargers?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Whenever you saw Sam Joe Ault get called for the Chargers, your thoughts were what?
Yeah, my heart sank a little bit. I was real ready for Joe Ault, and I figured that was I just thought that the way that the board was shaken out, I did think that the Chargers were going to go take a receiver because they don't really have anybody right there. But yeah, I mean, I don't think I was necessarily surprised by Harbaugh going to take an offensive lineman either. I think that was definitely in the back of a lot of people's heads. Immediately after that, I kind of started wanting to trade down. I didn't exactly want to force another tackle there, and I was kind of upset with Latham when we first got it. But then, you know, as some things come out, you see some reports. Bill Callahan says that Latham was his top guy in the class, so I'm going to roll with the guy who's you know, been a proven offensive line coach for years in the league.
You know, I don't want to come across as a hater. I understand, you know, there has to be some privacy and keeping things off the record, but the last thing I wanted to see Diana Russini was Bill Callahan's favorite player in the draft is J.C. Latham. Where was that at 2 hours ago? It's easy to say. I could have tweeted the same thing and just made people feel good. Like, it doesn't mean anything after you see the pick. Go out on a limb. And I understand she's a reporter, and you know, again, she's not necessarily trying to spoil the draft or spoil picks or leak war room information. But, like, don't come out afterwards and act like you know now he's the best. He's their favorite player in the draft. You could have said that 2 hours ago. And also, that yesterday, I don't know, did everyone just get it wrong? Did they get played by Harbaugh? Because every damn person that was doing mock drafts were like, J.C. Latham to the Chargers, J.C. Latham to the Chargers. That's Jim Harbaugh's favorite guy. And then they take Joe Ault. Like, every single mock draft yesterday had J.C. Latham at number 5 to the Chargers. And then it was Joe Ault. What the hell happened there? Who got fooled? Did they just get completely duped by, like, smoke screens coming out of the Chargers camp? Like, is that it?
Maybe they just didn't think the Chargers were going to take the top tackle in the class and then ask him to, like, flip to right tackle, I think is what they were thinking. They just thought that, like, Latham was playing right in college. They've already got a great left tackle with Slater. Maybe, like, try not to mix up positions. But clearly Harbaugh doesn't care about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe they were trying to, like, you know, I guess possibly the Chargers are like, hey, we're good with Latham. If we can get to 11, maybe that's it. Like, maybe that's where all the talk was. Like, they love Latham. But then, like, the Vikings are like, we don't have to trade all the way up to 5 to get McCarthy. We think he'll be here later. I don't know.
It also seemed like the Brock Bowers to the Jets was kind of a smokescreen. And it seemed like after everything started coming out that they were interested in a tackle the entire time. So maybe teams didn't want to slide past that 10 spot and let the Jets jump them.
Yeah, like, I mean, it seemed obvious that they had to fix their offensive line with their – it was bad, and they got an old-ass quarterback coming off of an Achilles. Like, it seems like that wasn't kind of the smart thing for the Jets to do.
CBS is grading the Titans pick higher than the Chargers pick. And I think it's close, but I think it's what you said, Sam. It's the notion that they've – you know, Harbaugh's going to have to move Ault to the right side. You know, it's not natural, whereas Latham – was a right tackle, but so the same thing, the same transition. But again, they're grading it out as a good pick. And like I sent to you last night, Sam, Skip Bayless liked it.
Yeah. That made me feel great.
Yeah, exactly.
I would also say the Chargers probably get pinged a little bit because they needed a wide receiver and they passed on 2.
Right.
To get Ault. So, like, for them, it looks different. Like, if the Titans got Ault, I think it would be a higher grade than if they got Latham. Because I just think people have judged him as a better prospect. Excuse me.
Yeah.
I'm allergic to J.C. Latham, apparently.
Did anybody see the interview, speaking of receivers, with Rome Odunze?
I came out of that a Roma Dunze fan. I thought
absolutely.
I thought he looked sharp at the draft. He looked cool.
He's a dog.
He looked like he was walking around as if he knew he was a bad man. And then yeah, the interview was kind of the solidification of that. But he
just well spoken and man, he confident. He was great. He was great.
That's what I'm glad happened. The bromance between him and Caleb Williams had been blossoming. They'd been, you know, working out together, flying to the draft together, tweeting at each other. And I'm glad that both of those guys are going to be together in Chicago. I hope that's a good duo. I hope Chicago has them a couple of young studs.
I loved what he said. They talked about the bromance. You know, you guys were on the same flight. And he was like, yeah, man, I was just trying to get some sleep, actually. You know, he was just shooting straight. And, you know, I was listening to it in my car driving back from the gig here, and it was exactly what I was thinking, John, when I pulled in. I was like, man, I can get behind him. I like him.
When I saw him walk across the stage in that nice black suit, I was like, you know what? I kind of want the Titans to draft him. That's all it took for me.
Yeah.
So overall, like, you're fine with what the Titans did, Sam?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you obviously needed to address offensive line at some point in this draft, and I think you saw – you know, not all of them are off the board, but I did think you saw a little bit of a run on offensive linemen there, kind of in the mid to late first round. So I think you definitely, you know, you've seen that there's a lot of top wide receivers left on the board. There's still a lot of, you know, top players in positions of need other than that. And I feel like you just kind of got that tackle spot out of the way, protected Will Levis a little bit, and then, you know, you can kind of go and work from there and probably draft best player available, I would assume.
How does it make you feel whenever the GM comes out and says, well, if you can't play left tackle, we got people on the roster that can. I don't know if that made me feel good about my number 7 overall pick, like saying, yeah, we drafted him to play left tackle, but if he can't, he'll be fine at right tackle. We'll figure it out at left tackle.
Yeah, that gave me a little worried about that. But then kind of the more things I saw, like Callahan is also, he's flipped multiple guys from right to left tackle in his time. Like he flipped Jedrick Wells when he was at, you know, with the Browns, and then also Tyron Smith when he was at the Cowboys too. So I think it's possible.
Well, yeah, I mean, like that was the selling point for hiring the Callahan son, was that you get the Callahan papa. Mm-hmm. You get Callahan auto parts here, guarantee in the box, you're going to get a good offensive lineman. That's kind of what you were sold. So, yeah, you kind of got to let him cook, right? You got to let Big Bill do his job. I think they'll be able to move him to left tackle. Mm-hmm. The problem with the Titans this year was they needed a left tackle and a right tackle. Now, if you tell me that you came out with 2 top 10 picks and you ended up with a left guard and a right tackle, I don't know how that makes me feel, especially if left tackle still sucks. If you look at the last 2 drafts, or were they at 10 last year or 11, wherever it was. But like basically, 2 top 10 picks, if you come out with a left guard and a right tackle, those aren't necessarily your money positions that you should be drafted in the top 10. But let's get as many good offensive linemen on the line as you can. Hopefully he can play left tackle. I trust that they'll be able to coach him up to do that. I wanted Joe Alt, but Joe Alt wasn't there. Like, if they had taken Latham over Alts, I'd probably be a little upset. But I'm not going to act like I know what I'm talking about either. Like, I'm just judging what people are saying. But you want the natural left tackle over the right tackle that's going to have to move. I think that would be a fair justification of it.
Seems like the big knock on Latham was just kind of discipline and, you know, some technical stuff, which is what you want to – that's the problem that you want to have if you have the coach of, you know, a coach like Bill Callahan waiting to be able to, like, refine those technical skills. So if it's, you know, some false starts and a couple holding penalties, like, hopefully that's just some technical things that you can kind of get worked out with a legendary offensive line coach.
And I got to say that I thought he looked cool too.
Yeah.
I thought he looked cool, and I thought he looked happy.
He did look happy.
To be in the Titans. You know, maybe he's just happy, hey, I'm a millionaire now. Maybe that was it. But, like, I thought he looked pretty happy to be there. And when I saw, you know, him be fired up to go to the Titans, and I was like, okay, I'm in on this guy.
Every coach has something good to say about their player that gets drafted, obviously. But, like, I thought Nick Saban had a good little piece on him as well, too. He spoke highly of him.
Was that before or after Nick Saban admitted to tampering at Alabama?
That was before, yeah.
Did you guys see that?
Yeah, that was great. I love that.
No, I didn't. Elaborate. I did not see that.
Yeah, he opened up on trying to tamper for Toledo cornerback.
Quinyon Mitchell.
Really?
He was our number one guy on the portal last year to try to get him to come out of the portal, and he would never get in the portal. Like, I don't know if that's maybe him, you know, saying, like, hey, we were trying to contact him, or like, hey, we had him on there, and like, if he was there, we were going to try to really aggressively go at him. I don't know. If you're saving, you could probably wiggle out of that one in the courtroom, but like, we know the truth. We know what that means. People are reaching out to him. Go to the portal. Go to the portal. He's like, nah, I'm good. Sounds like a bad decision from Quinyon Mitchell, but hey, maybe he loves Toledo. We'll continue draft coverage after the break. We'll look at the other picks. We'll talk about the Falcons. Going straight Falcon. They were the biggest question mark, the biggest, Whoa! We'll dive into that after the break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Sister cries out from her baby bed. Brother runs.
Hour number two is brought to you by Inward Half. I've been telling you about my friends at Inward Half for a while. Golf season in full swing. You need some new gear. You want to look good. They got some Tennessee-themed stuff for the fall that'll make you look good. The hoodies, amazing. The shirts, amazing. Experience the comfort of their signature polos, outerwear, and other accessories cleverly designed to keep you in the swing of everyday life. Check out their entire line at InwardHalf.com. Check out their social medias and look for them in your favorite pro shop. InwardHalf.com. Elevated and transformed performance-driven apparel into fashion-forward statement pieces for the entire family. You can find somebody for anybody in your family at InwardHalf.com. I got to say, boys, I'm struggling this morning. not from the White Claws, but my stomach is in shambles. My sinuses are draining. I appreciate Bear. I appreciate Marcus for what they did last night in the draft party. But they brought some pizzas in. I wasn't really in a pizza mood. I will say shout out to Bear. He cut the pizzas into very small pieces, which I appreciated.
Are you a small piece guy?
No, not usually. But like, I wasn't very hungry, so I just wanted to try some of the pizza. I didn't want a full piece, but they had like a little baby piece, and they had them cut up that way. And I could, you know, easily eat one of those and get a taste and without feeling too full. Like, no, usually I like big pieces, but I wasn't in a big piece mood because I wanted some wings too and to try those out. And actually, I had to get a chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A before I came because I had the 48 hours before like it expired from like whenever I'd gone to a baseball game and it got into my rewards. Like, hey, you better go or else you're going to lose it. Like, I can't lose a free chicken sandwich. So I went by and got it. That's either here nor there. But there's some chicken wings. And as the White Claw started flowing, I wanted some of those chicken wings. And I'm looking around. I'm like, okay, this one says honey chipotle. And I'm like, it's good, but it's a little spicy. You know me, Bob. Don't really like spicy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm looking and I'm seeing one, it looks like barbecue sauce. I'm like, okay, this is just some barbecue wings. And I ate like two or three of those. And they lit me up. And finally, Bear comes out of doing whatever he's doing. I was like, Bear, what the hell are these wings? Why are they so hot? He's like, oh yeah, those are my Korean hot zombie wings. I'm like, what? Excuse me? Like, so you have all these labeled garlic parmesan, honey chipotle. He's got them like written on the box to let us know. And the one that's basic that looks like barbecue, that's your crazy hot Korean wings? Like, why wouldn't that be the one that you take the pen and write down? Because it looks like barbecue sauce. And I thought, well, surely he thinks that everyone knows this is barbecue sauce, so he doesn't have to write it down. So here my dumbass is eating a couple of them, and then I'm absolutely on fire. He's like, oh, yeah, that's my Korean hot zombie.
Did you not, after one of them, were you not like, man, this doesn't really taste like barbecue?
I'm not going to lie. I'd just eaten the honey chipotle, and it had a little bit of kick to it.
Okay.
So then, like, I'm also hungry, so I'm just eating a couple of them. You know, like, there's a little ranch I put on it to kind of, you know, so, like, it didn't fully hit me at the time. I mowed through two pretty quickly, which maybe is my fault, too, for, blowing through the stop sign and not taking my time. But, again, they look just like barbecue sauce. And again, there was no description on the box, which made me think barbecue, basic. No, crazy hot Korean.
Yeah,
I only crazy hot Korean Bob I wanted was Mina Kimes, not these damn wings.
Well, I only had one wing, and for me it was like it was not the Korean hot zombie or whatever that was. It was one of the honey chipotle, and for me that was like, yeah, it's okay, but first and last, that's it. I just
it had enough that I was like, there's too much unknown here right now. I didn't even know where they came from, but I do appreciate it, but one was enough. I've had too many wings where it's not worth the pain, and it's this whole late hit. That sounds like what happened to you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the honey chipotle was good too, but yeah, it was too spicy. I'm not a spicy guy, so I was like, yeah, I'm just going to go down to barbecue. And nope. Crazy hot Korean zombie. And then when I text, he said he brought some double black diamond. I don't know if I saw those. I don't know. That sounds bad. I'm glad. I don't know if he was just talking about it at the restaurant in general or if he brought some. I didn't see those. It sounds too hot, too. I don't want anything with that. That's a good spicy
wing name, though. Double black diamond.
Yeah. I think those were the ones Dawson was tearing into. Which
should have just gone with the garlic parm, man.
I did eventually, but I don't really like garlic parm. But like, okay. It's a good wing, but. Yeah, I mean, our friends at Buckethead Tavern brought the wings. They were delicious. I was eating them. And I know their wings are really good because back when I used to do voluntary reaction, Barry used to bring us wings. Like, these wings are delicious. I like barbecue wings. What can I say? I like a little honey. Like, I like a little, like, honey crispers when you go to, like, Chili's or something. So I was like, you know what? The honey chipotle, yeah, those are fine. So I wasn't expecting hot. And I got my ass burnt up, both figuratively and literally.
I didn't catch the garlic parmesan. Was that like a dry rub one, or was it all sauced up?
It was closer to dry rub. I mean, if you're on the scale, it wasn't very saucy.
Yeah.
It was good, though. But yeah, that's what I tried to get as a palate cleanser a couple minutes later. I was like, maybe this one will ease this pain in my mouth.
Double hot Korean zombie.
You got cleansed.
I had a friend of my son's who used to, because he'd love wings, and we'd be on vacation. This kid came with us, and we went and got wings, and they'd go super hot. And then they take the celery and rub it on their lips. And I was like, you really think that works? And they're like, no, it does, man. It does. It's like, I don't buy that.
If I have to eat something that hot, I don't want it. If I have to rub celery on my mouth to ease the pain, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
I'm with you.
This isn't hot ones. Anyways, let's hit some hour 2 headlines. What did we miss yesterday, Sam?
In the NFL, some contract news went down during the draft as the Eagles announced A.J. Brown, another extension, 3 years, $96 million, $84 million of that guaranteed, the most guaranteed money in NFL history for a wide receiver. Short-lived day for Amon-Ra St. Brown. He had the previous record at $77 million. That one does not stand for too long as A.J. Brown cashes in on another big contract, $32 million annually for him.
If you're Amon-Ra St. Brown, are you going back to the table and being like, hey, you owe me a couple million?
I'm not actually happy.
If you're Amon-Ra, like, you feel like you're as good as A.J. Brown, right? No?
I don't think so.
Okay, you think he's, like, fine being behind A.J.?
Well, I mean, he might think that personally. I don't think Amon-Ra's near A.J. Brown.
It's like buying a car. You got that 24-hour window, like, ah.
Actually, yeah. They had a gun to my head. This isn't legal.
Yeah.
I can't sign a contract under duress.
A.J. Brown, though, one of our we appointed him as one of the few diva receivers out there. Got his.
I mean, if I'm Amon-Ra St. Brown, my numbers are better. At least they were last year. 1,500 yards, 10 touchdowns. I mean, A.J. was just under that at 1,457 touchdowns.
How many catches did Amon-Ra have?
106 for A.J., 119 for Amon-Ra.
Okay.
So yeah, more catches, so lower, you know, yards per average. But I don't know. When I watch – I mean, both those guys I think are elite. I just wonder – I mean, I guess the year before A.J. blew him out of the water. I mean, A.J.'s had back-to-back 1,500-yard seasons, so maybe he is a little bit more deserving.
I was a little sad. I kind of hoped maybe the Titans could just, like, bring A.J. Brown home after those 4 years in Philly. That's whatever. I don't like him anyway.
Whenever I got the A.J. Brown just, I was like, I thought people were going to say he just got traded because like last night at the draft party, like, oh, wow, A.J. Brown just, like, what?
You
what?
Got PTSD.
Just what? Yeah, just what? What? Oh, got a record-breaking deal. Okay, never mind. Most guaranteed money ever for a wide receiver. Good for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Good for him.
In college football, a rumor that we had talked about a little bit last week, but Jaden Rashada, he makes it official, the former Arizona State quarterback. He commits to Georgia. He'll have 4 years of eligibility remaining, obviously. So he's set to, you know, sit under Carson Beck for a year, learn that system, you know, kind of fall in line with that Georgia coaching and seems like a little bit of a project for Georgia, and I think it's a guy that has, you know, tremendous upside, but his college career has definitely been up and down and switching campuses and switching coaches and everything like that. It's been a bit of a whirlwind for Rashada. So he'll settle down there in Athens, Georgia, sit for a year under Carson Beck. I would imagine he probably starts a year after that.
So you think he's their starting quarterback next 2 years?
I think that's the kind of their plan. I don't think they pursue a guy like this if they're not thinking he's their future starter.
Bob, you agree with that? Disagree with that? Because he wasn't very good at Arizona State this year. It's not like he was a five-star prospect. He was, you know, like around middle four-star. I think one publication maybe had him as a five. But, like, he's not like the elite recruiting profile.
No, but I think you go into a program like Georgia, you get set up for success. And if he can understudy Beck for a little bit, yeah, I feel pretty good about him.
Okay. I guess I just figured they would have higher aspirations, which maybe he'll be a stud.
Who knows what they – we've seen this before with other programs, too, not just Georgia. They could come in with some bigger name, too. Time will tell. But, yeah, I kind of get the roadmap on it right now.
It's surprising to me. Whenever I saw it, I was like, okay, so he's just going to be a backup. He's supposed to be in Georgia hanging out. But I guess maybe he looks at that and like, yeah, I could take over this loaded roster in a couple years and get to the NFL.
Tired of messing around with hopping schools and stuff like that. Maybe just sit for a year and figure some things out, I guess. I don't know.
I know you want to play, but like going to Georgia and just sitting and winning and then, yeah, getting your chance, your opportunity, just seems so much cooler than just struggling at Arizona State. Even if you play, like going 6-6, like it just, I don't know. Like it just seems dumb if you're a guy trying to get to the NFL. Like, I don't know.
In the NBA last night, some strange news. Joel Embiid, he has been dealing with a case of Bell's palsy on the left side of his face. That's kind of come out recently. There's been some videos that were circulating of him at the free throw line where it's basically like blinking in slow motion, almost like, you know, it's a almost paralysis and like muscle weakness in your face basically. And so this is something that they said has been going on for a little bit, and they don't really know the timetable of when it'll end either. So Joel Embiid is dealing with that, but clearly didn't affect him too much last night as he drops 50 points, gets a win, and controversially maybe dirty little play too.
What was the dirty play? I didn't see the dirty play.
He was like on the ground under the basket, and Mitchell Robinson was getting a rebound, and he literally just grabs both of his legs.
Yeah,
and like
he was
falls over.
Yeah, exactly. He was right over Embiid, and it was in the first quarter too. I mean, it was early in the game, and he just pulled him to the ground. And afterwards, he only got a flagrant one. I mean, it really could have been an ejectable offense, I thought. But Embiid was just saying, I've had too many things happen where people fall on me, and I was just trying to protect myself. Actually,
is that when Mitchell Robinson left with an injury? Was that related to that, or was that something else? Because he left in a walking boot from the stadium, the arena, and only played 11 minutes.
It was not that.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if he had hurt him.
But it was definitely a dirty play, I would say.
Yeah. He could have easily hurt him. I don't think he did, though, on that. But
Embiid was awesome whenever we were watching, just draining threes, 50 points as the Sixers get back in that series. What do we make of the Woj announcement of Bell's palsy? Because he's like, hey, Embiid's trying to keep this private, but here's this big updates. Like, does that mean like he got the okay to give that out? Because like the Sixers probably couldn't have been thrilled about that if not. Is it Wojnarowski's problem if they want to keep it private, if he has the news and knows it's true? Like, I don't know what the ethics are there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question.
Now, Bell's palsy you can get rid of, right? Like, Bell's palsy isn't always permanent, right?
I was going to ask if any of you have had anybody in your life that's had it. I've had two people that I know that have had it.
Only good old JR. You know, growing up watching wrestling, Jim Ross, he dealt with it, one of the, you know, the main announcers. And I know some other celebrities that have dealt with it. George Clooney had it when he was a kid, he said, for like 9 months. Angelina Jolie, but nobody personally in my life.
Yeah, one friend of mine most recently that had it, it can, to answer your question, it can come and go. However, and it's been a couple of years for this guy, he's still got a little bit of it. You know, like it didn't, you know what I mean? It's like I don't know what it did to the muscles in his one side of his face, but he still has a little bit of a remnant effect, and I don't know if that ever goes away.
Okay.
You know,
so basically the muscles get just kind of altered a little bit.
And, right, right.
That's what they're pointing out with MB. It's like, hey, one side's got wrinkles, the other side doesn't. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's tough, but yeah, in most instances you can get past it, but
okay,
yeah, that's a tough one.
Anything else, Sam? What in the NBA we also had what the Magic bounce back. I told you that was I felt like they were going to bounce back, and I told you the Sixers are going to win like 7 to 12 points.
I looked at the NBA scoreboard last night, and I just thought of whatever you said at the end of the show. It was spot on. You should have three-leg parlayed that.
Well, I did. Unfortunately, nice. The third leg was the Lakers.
Ah.
Yeah.
What are you thinking? The Lakers never win.
I know. I'm a LeBron sucker, and I'm like, hey, I know. It was dumb.
Well, you got 2 out of 3. But, yeah.
I had a straight bet on the Magic, so at least we made some money last night. A little money last night. We could have made a lot more if the Lakers won, but they cannot beat the Nuggets. And I was preoccupied with this damn war room because I should have taken a Denver live bet whenever the Lakers got out 10. It's like, okay, now I can take Denver because they're clearly going to win.
Yep.
And I didn't. And instead, I got back home after the halftime is kind of when I left. And by the time I got settled in, the Nuggets had already taken the lead in the second half. I was like, yep, there we go. That's it. And then Michael Porter Jr. just jumper after jumper in the fourth quarter. And LeBron's body language, he knew, like, hey, we got nothing for this team. And he's sulking and yelling at people. And D'Angelo Russell scored as many points as the three of us combined. And
yeah, what? God, he just
can't. After hitting 7 threes game before.
He just can't get consistently untracked, man. That's a problem.
And he's pouting, not getting in the huddle, and just, yeah, I mean, like that. That team's headed for some type of breakup. I don't know how they bring Darvin Ham back if he gets swept in the first round again.
He seems so bad. Has he been that bad all year?
I don't know.
Like the video of, did you see the video of him in the timeout where he's trying to draw up a play? He just can't do it.
This is the problem, scribbling. In my opinion. This is the problem with NBA coaches. Is I don't know if he's any good. Honestly, it's hard to tell. Like someone like Spoelstra, we know is very very good. Popovich, we know is very good. But then there's so many of these other coaches. Who is it? The Orlando coach, Jamal Mosley, is that right? I mean, he's gotten them to the playoffs. They played pretty well this year. I don't know anything about him. It's just, it's very, very different than college in that regard.
Well, plus the playoffs are different just in the sense of, like, you actually have to make, like, a lot of adjustments because you're playing each other every time. The NBA in the regular season, there's not a lot of practice time. So, like, you're not really putting in too many specific opponent game plans throughout the regular season weeks.
Like, you're just kind of night basis.
Yeah, you're kind of doing your thing. You'll make a couple tweaks, but you're not like actually like putting something like firmly in. And you know, on one hand, Darvin Ham got them to the Western Conference Finals last year, got beat by the champions, lost a close series of the champions, playing the same team this year that just is a machine in Denver. Like, to me, it's more about Denver's excellence than it is Darvin Ham stinking and the Lakers not being able to beat them. It's more just like Denver's really good.
It's almost like Denver's figured out the and they did it last year, obviously winning it all, but they've really figured out how to flip that switch between regular season and playoff. They look totally different to me. They were good in the regular season. They look like the defending champs now.
And it's also just like they fall behind double digits every game. It's like, this is fine. We're going to walk you down. We're going to keep coming and coming and coming, and it's fine. And I don't know if Darvin Ham's any good to answer your question, though. Like, I feel like a lot of what they do is built around LeBron. And I know it took Darvin Ham a while to, like, figure out rotations. But I definitely – my take, Sam, is that I don't think he's bad, but I don't think he's good. I think he's just an average replaceable coach.
Did you see any of the press conference afterwards with LeBron saying, you know, he was like, it's just basketball, man. You know, we know how to win. It's just basketball. I don't know why it's this hard. It was just, like, such a like – nothing comment.
It was loser talk.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, like rationalizing, hey, man, we're better than this, but we just aren't winning. It's because it's just basketball. It's no big deal.
Okay, so when I saw the quote, it's just basketball, I thought maybe he was going kind of like he did after they lost to the Mavericks in the finals, where he's basically calling everybody losers. Like, yeah, it's just basketball. It's not really my identity anymore. I'm focused on happiness and life and doing all that. But he was just saying, no, it's just basketball. You got to make shots. You know, you got to.
Yeah.
It's simple. We're overcomplicating it. We're not doing certain things. Blah,
yeah,
blah.
We've won championships. We've, you know, I've won them with this guy. Is what he said. He was sitting next to AD. You know, he goes, but It was weird. He's not complimenting Denver. He's not necessarily bashing his own team. He's just kind of acting like it doesn't bother him too much. It's just how it goes, you know? And it's like, maybe that is how he feels at this point. Hard to tell.
If I'm him and I'm trying to win championships, that roster in LA is not going to do it. So I wonder, he's a free agent this offseason. Does he look around? Does he call Embiid and Maxey and hey, Philadelphia, you add me and maybe we can win the East and win a championship? I'll go to war against, Jokic next year with Embiid instead of Anthony Davis, maybe. Or does he just say, hey, at this point in my career, this age, with this roster, we're just kind of not ever going to win another one. I'll be interested to see how he approaches that offseason. Or if he makes the Lakers be really super aggressive and try to get him a star like Zach LaVine or Trae Young.
One last stat that was interesting on Embiid, and I think some of it's diluted a little because he shot a lot of free throws last night. But
true shooting percentage was through the roof last night.
Yeah, exactly. He was one of only four players that have scored 50 points with less than 20 field goal attempts or something. He only had 19 or 17 field goal attempts. It's a very small company that he kept there. So it was super efficient game.
My final Lakers thoughts would be, I hope LeBron, when he does lose to the Nuggets, he sits there and rues the day that he broke up that 2020-2021 team, because I think that was his fatal mistake for the end of his career. Jeannie Buss, I hope she feels bad not paying Alex Caruso. I hope LeBron feels bad getting rid of KCP and Kuzma to bring in Russell Westbrook, because if you kept Kuzma, KCP, and Caruso around AD and LeBron, this probably goes differently, and you don't let KCP go to Denver and become a really good, important player for them. I feel like that was the fatal flaw. They win the championship in 2020. They are in line, on pace to beat the Suns in 21 before Anthony Davis gets hurt. They're up 2-1, and then he breaks up the team, and I think that's LeBron's fatal flaw there. Was making that mistake, because he had some perfect complimentary pieces around him, and he traded all in for Russell Westbrook, and that was a disaster. And now he's having to go to war with Torin Prince and D'Angelo Russell, and it just doesn't hit the same.
It's true.
Bad decision by GM LeBron. We'll get back to the draft, some other bad decisions by GMs. Stick with us. Talking winners and losers, I do feel like we have to mention the Jaguars. How would you feel if you're a Jaguars fan, Bob, and your owner's son, who is a part of the decision-making process, shows up in a neck brace because he was on TV doing a wrestling angle the night before where he gets attacked and has to continue through with kayfabe and show up selling the injury because his company relies on it?
That made me get into wrestling, I will say, John. That one got me.
They beat the hell out of him on Wednesday night. His dad, Shad Khan, was there too, running around basically Red's dad in Friday. I don't know if you've ever seen Friday where Debo knocks out Red's son, or Red, when he comes and tries to get his chain back or his bicycle back. And his dad's I told you not to be over here. Come on, get out of here. That's the way Shad Khan was acting, so... So Baby Khan, Tony, had to show up in the war room wearing the wrestling neck brace to sell his injury from his attack.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, you want some of this too, old man?
Yeah, not a great Jaguars fan moment there. Yeah.
Did you also see the interview with Brian Thomas's parents where the reporter was how far has your family come? And she's well, we come from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Yeah, his dad's talking to you, inspirational, and the reporter's can you please just talk a little bit about how far this family has come? We came from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Maybe she was being deep. Maybe she meant something different. You're from there, Baton Rouge, you don't get out of here. Baton Rouge, we came from the slums of Baton Rouge, and I don't really think of that with Baton Rouge. No. I mean, with the college being there, I don't know, but maybe
it's not a great place.
Yeah, maybe that was her saying basically we got out of the mud, we came from Baton Rouge. If you know, you know. Maybe that's what she was going for, but the reporter didn't get it, and everyone on the internet laughed at it.
I was going to say, I saw one post on X where they always said was So about 1,000 miles is what you're saying. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm thinking maybe she was just saying like, hey, we came from the mud. Like,
that makes sense.
We came from bad. But maybe not. Maybe I'm just looking for the positive and trying to help her out. Maybe she just literally thought, well, where did you guys come from? Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The Jaguars, I couldn't get over that picture. Like that's going to live as a meme. It's going to live as a meme. Whenever the Jaguars lose, you're going to have the meme of them in the war room. If that pick isn't any good, it was made by a guy with a concussion and a neck brace after he got his ass beat on Wednesday night Dynamite or whatever it was on Wednesday night.
Oh, that's great.
They had that with Urban Meyer a couple years ago. Like they actually, like during COVID, had a fight. They had a match in the Jaguars stadium. And at one point, the wrestlers broke into the boardroom, and like Urban Meyer and some other coach were like in there doing something. Like, whoa, you know, and like you know that was a bad omen for the way the Urban Meyer era was going to go. And now they've decided to run it back and had one of the team executives wearing a neck brace in there. I thought that was a weird decision, but well, funny.
Well, one more thing that kind of goes on this thread: did you see this whole situation that happened with David Tepper, the Panthers owner?
No, I saw that. Is it where the diner?
Yes.
There was a diner, I guess, nearby that had put a sign up that said, please let the GM and coach make the decision, a.k.a. like owner, like stay out of it.
Yeah.
And the tweets from a reporter was like, David Tepper stopped into the restaurant for like basically to have a face-to-face with the owner and yeah. like try to get him to take it down or something. Is that what the story is, Bob?
Exactly. Went in and, basically said he wanted to have a word with the owners about the sign out front.
Tepper's a clown.
Yeah, it's like, dude, talk about, man, just not understanding, being tone deaf about some of the dumbest things. It's like you're at that level. You just got to let it roll.
What would you do if you're a diner owner and David Tepper came in and asked you to take it down?
Kick him out of my establishment.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell him to win a couple ball games.
Yeah.
Do you at least say, like, yeah, I'll take it down and just wire me $500,000?
Yeah, that definitely that one.
Is that like your first play? Like, how much? How much is it worth to you?
Yeah.
Not even like $500,000. I think you could just like get a nice, comfortable amount of money for something that he just would piss him off enough.
Yeah,
I'll toss you $100K.
It doesn't feel like it's something he would pay to have taken down, especially if the word got out because then everywhere. But like, I feel like once you let people know it bothers you, like all across town, like there should be like billboards of like make David Tepper sell the team and trying to run him out of town because he's obviously thin-skinned. Like he threw a beverage on fans at the game like last year, right? Like that was it. He threw a drink on somebody, right? Just straight up threw a drink on somebody, which seems like that should maybe get him like in trouble with the league. But now that you know it bothers him, like, yeah, I'd maybe put signs up all over town. And he might just say, bleep it and sell the team. Like, fine, these people don't appreciate me, I'm out. I'll sell the team. Like, it seems like you might be able to get him just to leave.
That's awesome.
It is funny, like same scope, different sport. But did you see what happened to Rob Manfred a couple days ago? He's at a baseball game, somebody came up and was like, "Hey, Rob!" He like looks at the camera. It's like, "Stop it with the blackouts, you bleeping moron!" Like,
how do you
like,
grow the game with the kids? Stop the blackouts.
Yeah, like cussed him out. And, like he just looked sad. Just like turned around. Like didn't give him the satisfaction of like having any reaction. But was like, he's probably just like, "Man, this sucks. Like, this sucks."
He deserves it though.
He does, but like that's a trend that like I laugh at, but like I feel bad. There was the coach, I think it was Billy Napier, right? Like Billy Napier was at a school on a recruiting visit, and someone asked for a picture, and then like post like had a video like smile if we're gonna go 5-5 or 5-7, like something like that. Yeah. Smile if you can't win, or and like he's just like, haha, good one, man. But like you know, like in the back of his mind, he's like, I hate this kid. Like bleep this kid,
little twerp.
Yeah, little twerp. Just running up on people and like, yeah, taking mean videos. Like, that's just mean. That's mean. They did to Dylan Brooks too, I think. After the Memphis playoffs, had him in the mall. Did the same thing. We didn't get to Kirk Cousins, but
that's a bigger story. Yeah,
we can do it in 3 at some point. Well, we'll talk Tennessee transfer portal next though, because we're starting to get a little bit more clarity there as the portal turns. We moved that back from the A block to. It's top of 3, but we still got to give it to you.
Means things are stabilizing. That's the way I look at it.
Fair enough. Things are stabilizing. Plus, the NFL draft was really big.
Yes.
If the draft hadn't happened, it probably would have been our lead story again.
You know what? Before we go, you're going to hate this. This is just a mock for 2. The first pick in 2 for Buffalo, the team you're already angry with.
Ladd
McConkey.
He's not going to be there at 38.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But. I was just doing the math on the best available players that ESPN had. I'm like, oh, you know, that would match up.
We can dream. Maybe he is.
Just draft another tackle. Who cares?
I thought it, I was.
Let's draft another tackle.
They got you. They got you taking Marshawn Nealand.
What the hell is that? Who's that?
Defensive lineman from Western Michigan.
If it's not the kid from Illinois, I'm out of there. Newton.
Yeah. Okay, I guess. Western Michigan defensive tackle doesn't do much for me, but like, hey, Sam told me if you're an athlete, maybe that's the quarterback. Like, what about the big uglies? Drafting a defensive lineman from Western Michigan.
I want my big uglies in the trenches in like SEC football.
Yeah.
That is something that I think translates. You got softer linemen at that level.
Yeah, that would be bad.
That'd be I want to trade back.
Got to have people wanting to trade up to trade back, though. I don't know if they want to trade up.
I think people will want to trade up at the start of the second here. I think there's a lot of receivers there still left that people are kind of wanting to.
Well, the thing is, there's a lot of receivers. You might wait. Like, it's not like there's a quarterback. Like, you'd hope there'd be a quarterback that fell that you could maybe, like, get somebody to trade up for. But I don't think anybody's going to be beating the door down for Spencer Rattler at this point. Because, like, anybody who even remotely needs a quarterback has already grabbed one.
They're projecting your guy Cooper DeJean way down. You could get him.
Really? Okay. Well, ESPN AM is the best available. No one knows what the hell is going on. Well, round two of the draft, we'll talk about that. We'll talk Kirk Cousins. But next, as the portal turns, stick with us. Hour two is in the books. Hour number three kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Hour number three is brought to you by Knoxville Smiles. Our friends, Dr. Stephen Malone and his staff, they want to take care of you. They want to take care of your teeth. They want your teeth. No, not in a creepy way. They just want to help you out. Restorative procedures, teeth removal, Invisalign, veneers, implants, they can do it all. Contact Knoxville Smiles today at 865-539-1776 to set up an appointment. You can take a virtual tour of their state-of-the-art West Knoxville facility at KnoxvilleSmiles.com. KnoxvilleSmiles.com. As the Tennessee portal turns, Bob, what's the latest updates here on Rocky Top?
Well, as always tends to be the case, we can talk about what we believe and see on the morning show, and then everything breaks and gets formalized after we leave.
But we've been pretty spot on in what's going to happen. I don't know if we're getting credit. I don't know if people are noticing, but I think we've been kicking ass on the basketball court.
I think so, too. I was thinking back to that, John.
You got friends in hot places.
Yeah. Well, you know, it helps. And, I mean, remember back we talked about Tobey and we were saying early, we don't think that we hope it works out, but we're not sure it's going to work out. We don't think it is. It's not working out. And then we've had other ones. But Felix Okpara, he committed yesterday. It helps solve the hole in the middle, so to speak, for the Vols. Our friend Will Warren put out some post yesterday that was really telling about, you know, it was about top shot blockers in the country for this last season. And he's up there in some really high cotton. You've got Donovan Klingon, Ryan Kalkbrenner, Zach Edey, and there's Okpara right in the middle of all that statistically. So I think when you look at that, that's I think that's exciting, you know, and we were having this discussion in the green room last night watching the draft back and forth because our friend Brett from the G.I. Jake show is a little skeptical of Felix, but you and I, John, and I think Sam, we stand on business, but we stand on the belief that he might be kind of a mix of both Tobey and Jonas. Maybe Tobey's kind of motor with Jonas's ability to, you know, block shots, be a rim protector. We think it could be better in that regard. Offensively, it's a work in progress. But I'm going to put my bets on Coach Barnes, getting him developed to be, you know, I don't see him as a guy that's going to be spotting up and shooting mid-range jump shots or threes or anything like that. Let's call it what it is. But I think he's going to be effective underneath. So I think that's a big commitment. Igor Milicic. The story I'm hearing in the back channels is because everybody's like, oh, I don't know, we're hearing he's going to come, but why is there no commitment? It might be a paperwork issue. I can't speak to what has to happen, but there has been talk of some visa paperwork needing to happen, maybe when you're switching states for residency, when you're from another country. There's some things in motion there, but by all accounts, still trending to be a Vol once it's all said and done. We may hear more on that today, the way things have been moving. Chaz Lanier, obviously he's now in the portal with a no-contact tag. We talked about that yesterday. He's now formally been crystal balled, for what that's worth, to go to Tennessee by on three. So national pundits are pretty much saying this one's that's how it's going to play out. So, and then no word on Cade Tyson other than some of the stuff we've heard in the past, like he didn't like the money North Carolina put in front of him, and I don't know if Tennessee's still making a run on him. That'd be the way I look at it at this point, is if Cade Tyson somehow ended up in the equation, great, but I'm not expecting it. So I think things are moving. It's been slow, but we're getting there, and it's starting to take shape. And I'm telling you, if what we've been saying already, we've got Felix, if we get Igor and we get Chaz like we think we're going to at this point, that's starting to shape up to be a pretty good roster.
There's been a lot of buzz about Lanier.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I was uneducated on him when I talked about him earlier in the week. Like, you know, I just kind of assumed North Florida, smaller guard. You know, if he comes here, nice. Kind of as a foregone conclusion, like a depth piece type of thing. But it does seem, like you said, highly sought after. And it seems like the coaching staff thinks very highly of him, too, from some of the stuff I've seen and heard people talk about, and some reports from there. It's like the staff sees him as, I don't want to say next year's Dalton Connect, because that's not fair. That's a phrase that's always going to be kind of thrown around. But sees him maybe as kind of the go-to scorer.
Yeah.
Like, as the guy that's going to be like, hey, the game's breaking down. Who can get you a bucket? They think Lanier can be that guy that can get you a bucket there.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point, because I read something yesterday. It was a post on X that had some backstory on Chaz. And as I read it, it sure felt to me like, okay, I get it even more now as far as being just a fit in a Rick Barnes system. I'll just read a quick excerpt here. Chaz Lanier has an awesome story. He was 5'6" at the beginning of high school, had to work his way up from the freshman team to JV, then varsity, did not play AAU, held only two D1 offers as a senior in high school from North Florida, where he went, and Campbell. Heads to North Florida, admits he wasn't ready to play as a freshman, picked up a little more as a sophomore, played behind three all-league guys as a junior, admitting I was a role player, playing good defense and making threes, and I think I did a good job at that. Senior year, one of the key guys graduated and two others transferred. So that spot to be the guy opened up, and I felt ready for it. I mean, you just hear that whole progression, and it just feels like a Rick Barnes player, right? It's developmental. It's not some kid that came in with otherworldly talent and just expected to get his right off the bat.
It sounds like Dalton Connect is what it sounds like. A guy that, you know, was a late bloomer in terms of size. And
I thought the same thing.
And, you know, had to go somewhere and figure out basketball, essentially, that now has figured it out and is ready for a bigger platform. I mean, again, anybody that transfers to Tennessee, Dalton Connect's going to get brought up, and that's probably not going to be fair, but it did seem like a similar background. All right, so we got all this wrapped up. Sam, do you have any thoughts now that we kind of know? We've kind of been braced for Okparo. We kind of knew that was the case, but, like, do you have a take on the Okparo versus Jonas Adu? Does he even have to be as good as Jonas Adu? Because Brett was making me mad last night during the draft. He kept wanting to talk about it, and finally I was like, look, Brett, enough. I don't want to argue with you off of the radio. I don't argue for free. But, like, he's dug in saying, hey, Tennessee downgraded in the portal at the center position. Do you agree or disagree with that? And does it really matter if it's only a slight downgrade?
I wouldn't say you downgraded, and I wouldn't exactly say you upgraded either. I think you just you replaced the production, and I think it was replaced in maybe a different way. You're maybe not getting the offensive prowess that Adu was bringing to you necessarily, but I think you're absolutely upgrading on the defensive end in terms of a rim protector and a shot blocker with Okparo. So I'm under the belief that I think he will honestly probably fit better kind of into what we're asking for as a team. It seems like, you know, what you're going for, you're obviously losing Dalton as that main scorer from last year's team, and it feels like you're hitting the portal to try and get two or three guys in that portal that can kind of bring a more of a balanced attack scoring. So it feels like if you have that balanced attack scoring-wise and you've got a rim protector in Akpara, I really just don't think you have to rely on him as much for the offense that you did with Adu.
Yeah, like I don't care that he only averaged 6 points a game. To me, like what I'm looking for is rim protection and toughness. Mm-hmm. Like physicality and rim protection. I mean, I know those kind of go hand in hand, but like that's what I want out of this big. Because, yeah, last year Jonas had to do some scoring, but Jonas had to do some scoring because Zakai was a little rusty coming back, but also, like, two of your three starters, or two of your other three starters that weren't named Dalton Connect and Zakai Ziegler, were, you know, pretty offensively challenged at times. Josiah, inconsistent and challenged at times. Vescovi, you know, consistently challenged all of last year. You know, I don't mean that as a pot shot at him, but, like, he had a bad year last year. He never really snapped out of it. If he gave you 8 points in a game, you felt good about that. Like, ideally, if you're telling me you bring in Lanier, you have senior Zakai, you have Dubar, like, those guys should be more consistent scoring. Are any of them going to be as good at the top end as Dalton Connect? No, but I don't think Tennessee needs someone as good as Dalton Connect at the top end. I think they need three guys that can score 12 points consistently on any given night and get up to 16 or 17 from time to time. I don't need my center getting dump downs and having to make sure he's getting involved. I want my center catching lobs. I want my center blocking shots.
I would agree with all of that. I would argue collectively this offense, if things get dialed in the right way and we get the players that we're talking about getting, I think collectively it's a better offense than what we've had.
Because there's
no question, right?
This will be the best offense you've had since, you know, the 19 team. Like, you know, going back to the Grant Williams team. The question is, can you have that same level of defense? And you know, is that offense maybe a little bit better geared towards postseason success or modern basketball? Because Grant had to do a lot of work in the post and, you know, at the free throw line to get that offense propped up. But, like, no, last year's offense was awesome when Dalton Connect was going. If Dalton wasn't, you know, playing like a top 10 pick, the offense struggled at times.
Yeah. I'm just looking now at I made mention of it a minute ago, but here's what Will Rohde wrote. This is a full list of Big Six conference players who blocked 80-plus shots last year, and there's five of them. Two of them are already going to be gone, Donovan Klingon and Zach Edey. The other three—
Two studs, two monsters.
Yes. The other three, Ryan Kalkbrenner, Clifford Omoyuori from Rutgers, who's in the portal, by the way, and Felix Akpara. So
Kalkbrenner is a 7-foot monster, or at least a defensive monster that, you know, is good at blocking shots. That's good company to be in. I don't really know the guy from Rutgers, but like,
he's a stud. He's coveted, and he just hasn't decided where he's going yet.
All you need to know about Akpara is he would have set Tennessee's all-time single-season blocks record last year.
Yeah.
He's a different level of rim protector than Jonas Adu.
Yeah, and sounds more physical, too. He's not a wilting violet, as they would say.
No, and I mean, that was everyone's biggest complaint about Jonas Adu all season, was that he was not tough enough when it came time to be tough. Whenever he was going up against some bruising physical people, he wasn't ready to answer the bell. I have more confidence sitting here today that if Tennessee goes up against Mississippi State, Akpara would fare better against Tolu Smith in that front line than Jonas Adu did.
I think you're right.
And I think that's an upgrade from that perspective. I don't need him scoring 14, 15 points a game. I'm good on that. I don't need my center doing that.
And how about somebody sent me a note, you know, the picture that Tennessee basketball put out about Akpara with he had the Vols jersey on with number 0. They were like, oh, maybe a foreshadow on Jonas. I was like, I need a foreshadow, man. That's a flex. That's we have moved on, in my opinion. That was what was happening there.
What number did he wear last year at Ohio State? Do we know?
It was a double-digit number. I want to say like 24 or something.
34.
Yeah.
34.
Nice. Definitely a shot.
Yeah, like they just like say, hey, here's some extra jerseys. Like, did it say Adu on the back? Like, hey, we
I don't know.
He left his jersey here. Just throw this one on. Like, it definitely seemed calculated, right?
Because Dubar was in a Connect jersey, too, I think, in his photos, wasn't he?
Well, that's why I'm asking him. He's like, hey, we got some extra ones laying around here. Just throw the Connect on.
Could be.
Or it's maybe they only got sizes in zero. For Pittman.
It was kind of made me chuckle though when they were like foreshadowing. It's like, dude, he's visited Baylor. He's visiting Arkansas this weekend. I mean, he's gone.
Oh yeah, Adu's gone. It's more. I don't. Once Adu hit the portal, to me, like I was, you know, pretty convinced he was gone. Like,
yeah.
Maybe you would say 90% at the time. It feels like 100% now. But like, to me, it was a door shut. It's more of a statement about Awaka is the way I took that. Like, I'd already made peace with Adu. It was more like, hey, sorry, Awaka. Like, we told you.
Yeah.
We told you we wanted you back. We told you we had to move on, though. So, like, make up your mind. He didn't. And I did, as we're talking about it, wonder how Awaka felt seeing the news. Because in the back of his mind, like, he probably thought, like, hey, at worst, I'm going back home. And maybe I kind of want to do that anyways, but I'm going to play it out. But, like, I got a spot at Tennessee. And now it's like, nah, you really don't.
I firmly believe now, again, based on what we had heard and we talked about it, kind of portended it going into before Barnes had his press conference. And then Rick, as we said, also was kind of like being kind and said, oh, we'd love to have Tobey, but he's got to make up his mind. My opinion was if Tobey didn't say something right, you know, like within a couple hours, it was over. And he didn't. So clearly then, they've moved on.
I mean, it might be wrong on the timeline, Bob, but I feel like it was – basically hours after that press conference that this guy entered the transfer portal, it felt like, or at least like surfaced like to be connected to Tennessee. Maybe my timeline's off on that, but like it felt like the dominoes started really, you know, falling after that press conference for Barnes.
I mean, to take it a step further, I think that presser maybe served two purposes for Barnes. He wanted to get out there with some context on what had happened with Jonas, and then to say it was a public point of saying, make up your mind because we're done if you're not ready to join us.
Almost just a now or never. Like, yeah. here it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we sit here, if you had told me, you know, 2 weeks ago you're going to lose both Adu and Awaka, I would be pretty concerned about that. But I got to say, as we sit here now, telling me that we got Felix Akpara and J.P. Estrella, kind of as your 1-2 punch. I'm not going to say you upgraded, because I don't think that's fair to say yet, just because, like, I do think Awaka was pretty solid last year whenever he wasn't in foul trouble, and I think Adu was a, you know, an all-conference type of player. But, like, I'm not here sweating it. I'm not here thinking, wow, Tennessee, you know, completely dropped the ball here. Is that fair to say? Do you agree, Sam?
I think you got a player out of the portal that, you know, brings kind of both sides of what Adu and Awaka were bringing to your team. Like, I don't think I think he's not as talented offensively in that sense. He's a little more similar to Awaka, but I think he brings that toughness and that physicality that Awaka brings, and a shot blocker that Adu was, but I think a better shot blocker, obviously. So I think you're not exactly getting a better offensive player, but I think you're getting a better fit for the team, obviously.
If he can catch the damn ball and dunk, like, that's all I need. Like, because there's too many times that Adu didn't catch the ball.
Yeah.
Just think about that. Just think about the Purdue game. He could not hold on to the ball. Could not hold on to it in the biggest game of the season. That's all. I've definitely moved past it. I do think. And again, I put trust in Barnes and the G-Reg and the whole staff. They're putting they must have a lot of comfort in the development of J.P. Estrella. They must. And that's good. I'll buy it.
Estrella showed enough that I have confidence in it, too. Yeah. Especially when you look at, you know, Barnes' track record of development. And just if you stay here for 4 years, you're probably going to be able to play by the time you leave. Like, yeah. I think that's a fair assumption. So, like, Estrella showed me enough in year one where I expect him to be a good contributor in year two.
Yeah. I think we're going to love Estrella, too, for just the vibes with him, too. He's going to be he's already a likable player, but you can just see it, just, you know, a little bit of the kind of the team clown, but I mean that in a good way. You know what I mean? It's like
he's the glue guy.
Yeah.
He's the dap master. He'll be the one that gives the handshakes that everyone likes, that keeps people loose. Clown doesn't mean bad. Clown doesn't mean, yeah, but like I know what you're saying. Like he's the vibes guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Energy guy.
It's funny as we sit here and I'm describing what I want my center to do, Bob. I realize that this whole time I've been chasing Tyson Chandler from the Mavericks. Like that 2011 championship team that Tyson Chandler and Dirk won. I've been wanting my center to be basically Tyson Chandler. Block shots, rebound, and catch lobs and be able to finish. Like that's all I want my center to do.
Forgot about Tyson Chandler on that team. He was key.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
He was awesome. He was really good for like a 5 or 6 year stretch. And that's what I've been wanting my center to be ever since. Unless you're Nikola Jokic or Zach Edey and like you're completely dominant, I'll take that. But otherwise, just play defense, protect the rim, catch dunks. Catch the damn ball. Catch the ball.
That's right.
We'll catch a break. We'll come back. We'll hit the phone lines. Yeah. Got T-Carp on the line.
Yeah.
Stick with us, T-Carp. We'll get you after the break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.